11 o'clock hour of the DDC, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason hanging out with you on this Friday. We say hello to Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. You can hear him every weekday, 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan and across the Outkick network as well. Hut, how we doing?
Guys, I am doing fantastic. You know how the Willie, Chase, D-Mace, you know the grind of a radio row, and we did not have to go this year. We sent producers and engineers down, and the guests came, sat down in front of the camera, and joined the radio network. It was refreshing, Willie, because I don't feel like I need to go take a nap for 24 hours.
Man, there is nothing, you know, and it's funny because for years you were in the mall. You were right on the cusp of the mall. Uh-huh. So you equate like the grind of Radio Row. You remember this, D-Mace.
Yes.
You're grinded. You're done at the end of the day. It's just like walking the mall for a couple hours. So I would admire the people that go from Radio Row and then walk into the mall. It's like, what are you doing? You're going to be dead. You're never going to recover from both in the same day.
Going to the room, take a nap.
Remember the year, Willie? I can't remember when this was. It may have been Cam Newton or just before that the story broke of the men's clothing store that had handed out free suits or something to players, and it was literally across the walk area from where we were set up at the time, and the men's clothing store was right there at the center of attention on Radio Row, where we were broadcasting right outside in the mall. It was bizarre and awesome at the same time.
That one and the other biggest circus I can remember was when the Johnny Manziel did the autograph signing and stuff, which would be nothing today, which would be totally allowed to do, and he could do it as often as he wanted. But remember the whole thing with the money and stuff? That was an absolute zoo when he came in there that year.
Didn't Todd Gurley get suspended for like 4 games for
selling his jersey, wasn't
it?
I don't think it was Todd Gurley. It was who's the receiver?
It was Green. A.J. Green.
A.J. Green.
Yeah, for the jersey, yes.
Yes, and now Aaron Murray was a freshman that year, I believe, and he was going through the spring, and A.J. Green sold his jersey, autographed it and sold it, and was suspended for the first 4 games of the season. Georgia got off to a slow start, and look at NIL now.
How far have we come? That was like
10 to 12 years ago, probably.
Yeah, that wasn't that long ago. They suspended him
4 games for, $1,000 somewhere around.
And Johnny Manziel, it wasn't that much. So he's got to be gone. Come on. Are you kidding? Just born a few years early.
I've heard, guys, that Radio Row and Media Days for the SEC will be here next year.
That is the rumor.
I think that's more than rumor now. I believe that's happening. Which means that we will all be piled together, making sure that everyone gets the commissioner on whenever they announce their 25th and 26th teams of the conference.
We're good with 16 right now, Jonathan. Come on. You got to believe everything
he says. Yeah, right.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, is with us. All right, let's talk some Titans. Training camp will open Tuesday. Mike Vrabel will address the media, and then they get to work. For years, Hutt, we've talked about pass rush with this team, and they had to get better at pass rush. Well, I think they did that. They signed Bud Dupree in the offseason last year. Harold Landry had his breakout year, got the new contract. So are you still as confident about their pass rushing abilities? And, oh, by the way, Rashad Weaver was hurt, and I think he could be a factor this year for the Titans. So how do you view pass rushing for Tennessee as we go into the season?
I think it's the nucleus of the team, honestly, Chase. I think they're built through that first and foremost. I think it's the strength that they can point to it and know it's going to be consistent and be consistent from September on. It took 4 or 5 weeks for everyone to get going. And then Dupree really didn't come on until the final month of the season. And he admitted by October that he felt like he had pushed it too much coming back and playing as much as he was. Not that he shouldn't have started in camp and in September, but that he was, maybe he didn't need to push it as hard as he did. Now I think it's behind him, and he's ready to go coming off that ACL. And I look at the consistent pass rush and think, well, you've got a young secondary. They should be okay. I think the X factor to everything is Caleb Farley. And if Caleb Farley hits the same way – Jeffrey Simmons, whenever he was drafted, we were told he's a top 5 talent that fell to them. And we were told the same thing about Caleb Farley. If Farley is that guy, I think the Titans – last year they were the 6th best scoring defense in the NFL. I put them top three if Caleb Farley shines this year. They can be that good. They can be up there with the Bills, the Patriots.
Jonathan Hutton is with us from Outkick. We're talking Titans. All right, so Hutt going into camp, right tackle and left guard. What's the ideal thing that plays out for those two spots?
That's a great question, Willie. I mean, Dylan Raidens would get the reps at right tackle finally this past offseason. So I think I lean that direction. And last time we joined you, maybe it was a couple of visits ago, the one start that we saw him featured was the San Francisco game on Thursday night, and he wasn't terrible. I mean, he wasn't a Pro Bowler that night either against Nick Bosa. But, playing right tackle, that's the position that we all assumed he would be playing last year too. And then they moved him inside. Nicholas Petit-Frere, the rookie, I don't count him out because of the playing time he received at Ohio State and as long as he played there and started there on their offensive line. I don't think that's the ideal thing to start a rookie on the edge in the league immediately. But keep in mind, Raiden's played in one game prior to being a second-round pick because of that 2020 COVID year, and then he was drafted in 2021. And meanwhile, Nicholas Petit-Frere's coming in, and he's a vested vet for the Ohio State Buckeyes. So I think that's a battle to watch. And then on the inside, Jamarco Jones from Seattle hasn't been talked about as much as Aaron Brewer, but I think Jones is squarely in the mix at left guard just as much as Brewer is, because Brewer is a better backup center than Daniel Munyer, who every fifth snap last preseason could not connect with the quarterback under center or in the shotgun. So I look at – so let me explain the left guard center thing. If you go with Brewer at left guard and you're going to cut Daniel Munyer, well, if something happens to Ben Jones, you move Brewer inside and then you insert Jamarco Jones at left guard. If all things are equal, do you want to have to make three moves to your offensive line when you really just have to put your backup center in if Jones is as good as Brewer could be at left guard? That's how I would look at the battle. Can Brewer be that much better than Jamarco Jones, who's a veteran that's been with Seattle for quite some time? I'm intrigued by it. It's not a, it's not a beautiful, sexy position battle,
but
those
important.
Are the two. Those are the two that will matter when the pads come on and they have the two joint practices, not the preseason games, but the joint practices against the Bucs and the Cardinals.
We'll talk with Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Now we've talked about the players and we've been discussing them all this week. Question marks: who do we think is going to have a big year? Who needs to really show up? I'm looking at this team from a offensive standpoint, and I think this is the year, just like Shane Boyne last year was the year he had to prove that this defense was making a jump, and they absolutely did. They were one of the best defenses in the National Football League. Well, I feel the same way about Downey. This is the year because they took a step back in the passing game as well as the running game. Now, you can say the running game was because of Derrick Henry and him being injured, but they just took a step backwards as an offense. So is this the year that Todd Downing has to prove that he is an offensive coordinator in this league?
Yes. I'm going into last year, D-Mace, I said based on the talent, he's coming on, he's following Arthur Smith, and he's following a season where they put up record numbers for an offense for the franchise in many categories. Tannehill was great. You had a 2,000-yard rusher, Derrick Henry. Henry was on pace for that last year through the first 6 weeks of the season, and then the injury happened in Indianapolis in late October. I'm with you, though. I was saying last preseason, Downing should be – based on the talent that they had and the offense that we just witnessed the year prior, Downing should be mentioned for head coaching positions. Not saying he should get the jobs. But he should be, his name should be ballied around in an echo chamber that is NFL Network whenever people ask about who are some dark horse candidates. And that didn't happen, and we know why. You just mentioned the great reasons. Tim Kelly is a huge addition to the offseason.
Coming from
Houston, they wanted to interview him whenever Art left to go and take the head coaching job in Atlanta, and Houston blocked them from interviewing him. And they got him now because Houston got rid of him. And to me, they were going to consider him for the full offensive coordinator job then, and now they have Tim Kelly there who's helping with the passing game coordination. I think that's big because Mace, I think they get back to more of a two tight end set. They didn't go with that as much last year. That's where Tannehill is great. That fits the mold and mentality of how they're built through the run and through Derrick Henry. And they've upgraded at the tight end position without even needing to see what these guys do on the field with the Titans. Austin Hooper is a number one tight end. And they have Chigakwankwo, who is, when you see him run and how he is built from the base, I mean, he's got tree trunks for thighs. I'm intrigued to see how they use him and how they go more too tight with some of the depth they have at the position, given the fact that we have a lot of questions at wide receiver. I think it's too tight, which is comfortable for Tannehill. That's where the bread and butter was in 2020, and the Titans ran a ton of it. But Houston ran more of it that same year, and Tim Kelly was calling plays then. I think I look for that as much as I do Downing taking a step forward. I think that offense takes a step forward because I think they get to more of the personnel packages that fit them.
Now, can they advance? I'm not talking about win in the NFL because I know they can win in the NFL during the regular season, but can the Tennessee Titans advance in the playoffs with this type of play, going back to, you know, running a football with Derrick Henry, using the ball control? They don't have the wide receiver that they had last year, you know, because we don't know about the guys. We don't know about Treylon Burks. We don't know about Woods because of the injury. We know what he has done, but right, because of the ACL, there's still a question mark there. So the Titans are going to have to lean heavy, at least at the beginning, on Derrick Henry and that offensive line. And can they win? If they have to do that all season, can they advance in the playoffs?
They can advance in the playoffs if Ryan Tannehill plays big in the big moments. Mm-hmm. You're referencing A.J. Brown and the playmaking ability that they lose. Think of the game-changing plays that A.J. Brown made for this team in big catches. Big throws by Tannehill, too. But the highlight reel, one-handed grabs in Houston, or the physical touchdown catch and run in Baltimore. I mean, there is a litany of plays that open up the game and keep possessions alive that A.J. was making over the course of his short tenure here over the 3 years. They need that guy to emerge, and that's Treylon Burks. That can be Robert Woods, but we don't know the full answers to either one because Woods is coming off the injury. Burks, we haven't seen practice, and they barely have seen him practice. Point being, in the postseason, they're going to have a plan B whenever they can advance, Mace, for a game with the style that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in 2019. They can make a run. But the last three playoff losses by the Titans, the opposing defense has stopped Derrick Henry in all three of them, Kansas City, Baltimore, and then last year against Cincinnati. And there has not been the pick-me-up part of the offense through Tannehill and the passing game whenever that first option has been solved by the opposing defense. That's what they've been lacking. And it comes down to just playing big in the big moments. Tannehill's capable of doing it in the regular season. I have no ifs, ands, or buts.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we got zapped. The solar storm.
Yeah, something got him. Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Guess we lost him there, yeah, Max.
Okay, it was good, well, too.
Yeah, that was good stuff with Hutton. He was on a roll there. And he's going to be joining us on a regular basis here with the football season. So we will catch up with him again soon. Appreciate him taking the time to join us. Up next, though, Willie, he's got his Football Outsiders notes ready to go when it comes to the Tennessee Titans. We were going to get into that, but we're your racing station. 102.5 and 106.3, The Game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday at 1 o'clock for the Pocono 400 from the Tricky Triangle. You can also join some guy named Chase McCabe every Sunday morning at 8 for Chasing Checkers as I talk to the drivers and get you set for race weekend. Bobby Labonte and Austin Cindric, my guests this week. NASCAR on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game is presented by the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway.